The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined as ever by Rob Blanchett. How are you, mate?
I'm very, very hot and sweaty. So here we are recording in the morning and it feels like I'm in Barbados or somewhere like that. But I'll take it. I don't like to complain about the weather. And of course, our football club is out on tour in some very, very hot conditions and we'll be discussing them today.
Do you reckon it's hotter in the UK than it is out there at the moment?
Like, someone said this to me yesterday. They were like, you know, United have gone away for this warm weather training, you know, to get the miles in and to get the sweat levels up and the energy levels up. It feels like it's hotter here than anywhere else at the moment, but maybe that's just our Englishness. You know, if we have one hot day of summer, the sun shines, and suddenly we think we're the hottest place on earth.
Yeah, well, it's meant to be 43 degrees or 44 degrees in London next week. So yeah. God help us.
But, I'm sure it's hotter in places like Barcelona.
Well, Frankie de Jong might know. He's back in Barcelona. John Murta and Richard Arnold probably know as well. We'll talk about them later in the show. You mentioned, Rob, we're recording this on Tuesday morning. This is before the Liverpool game. Obviously, there's a friendly in Thailand on Tuesday afternoon UK time. What we'll do is we'll look at that game in detail and the Melbourne friendly on Friday after the Melbourne game happens. So the podcast will be a few hours late, perhaps, on Friday, but we'll have some football to sink our teeth into then. Just a reminder before I get into the topics of today, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts on Apple, Google, Spotify, etc. and watch us twice a week on Tuesdays and Fridays on YouTube as well. So join the community, hit the like button, subscribe. We just passed a milestone, our first milestone on YouTube. Keep the steam coming. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so. Follow us on Twitter too, @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @PromisedLandMU for the show. Today, we'll talk about Frankie de Jong because that is never ending. It's 10 weeks worth of chasing now. And United are making public appearances to give the impression that the deal is close. We'll talk the latest on that. Do you see Sports 10 Reasons Why De Jong Isn't Going to Join United? Oh my God.
Sports 10 Reasons Why We're Run by Barcelona as a publication. Yeah. Oh, so it's funny, the major clubs obviously in the mainland in Europe, it does happen here as well, but certainly in the mainland over there, they have these mouthpieces that work directly to work their politics. So yeah, that was quite funny because as soon as they put that out, there was all sorts of countering articles coming out at the same time about the potential deal. So it's
also
what happens, isn't it?
LOL, United not getting De Jong, lol. As if they've just found out now after 10 weeks. I know United are bad in the transfer market, but surely you don't think they'd invest as much time as they have in this deal if they thought that they'd get rejected 10 weeks down the line.
And I think a lot of it, Scott, is about driving social media traffic as well. So, you know, when I've reported bits and pieces via my own Twitter and just put it out, you get a ton of comments back, obviously. And then when you kind of have spend a little bit of time to sift through them, a lot of them are upset Barcelona fans. They're not Man United fans talking about how happy they are about Frankie de Jong. It's Barcelona fans going, who are you? Why have you got a tick? Et cetera, et cetera. It's because they read things like Sport. So, you know, it's just how it goes. It's the kind of roundhouse of media of the modern day. But yes, the Frankie de Jong thing is never ending until it actually ends. So, as you said, Manchester United in Barcelona quite publicly, Murta and Arnold happy to be photographed, pretending to like be in a cafe and hiding away. but certainly not, and being snapped. And of course, that's gone around the world in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk to Young in more detail in a second. We'll also talk on today's show after the De Jong section. Ten Hag's first presser, he admitted midfield and offense, as he put it, was where he was looking to strengthen. There were 10 questions, probably about 7 on Ronaldo, which we'll talk about a little bit later. We'll talk about reports from The Times suggesting that Richard Arnold's actually trying to change Ronaldo's mind about leaving. We'll talk about Marcus Rashford and things we've noticed in training. We'll talk Ajax targets, Lisandro Martinez and Antony. Maybe a bit of Brian Brobbey's on the agenda as well in the last few days as well, isn't he? But it doesn't look like United will land him. And then obviously on Friday, we'll talk about the actual football itself. But let's get back into Frankie de Jong. Rob, I think me and you are on the same page and have been for a while about where this deal stands. Like obviously just mentioned there that the mouthpiece of Catalan football sport has put out over the weekend that Frankie de Jong doesn't want to make this move. I don't think it's any secret. He said it from the very beginning that he wants to stay at Barcelona, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't move if a deal were to come to pass. And I think we're getting to that point now. As we mentioned, Richard Arnold and John Murtough have been in Barcelona to talk to the likes of Jordi Cruyff, and the Barcelona, I think, vice president was there and the sporting director too. There's some issues with the deal that have meant that it's been held up over the past few days, and we've obviously spoken about that in the last few episodes as well. United have agreed a base fee. As far as we understand, it could end up costing them overall around 85 million euros. But the issue is that Barcelona owe 17 million pounds-ish in deferred wages to De Jong after the COVID pandemic. And Barcelona, obviously trying to juggle a bunch of things, reduce salary, sign 7 new players for a lot of money, want to try and cut some corners where possible, and are looking for a little bit of help with those deferred wages, whether that comes from De Jong's camp or that United end up helping them in a financial sense to just push the deal over the line. As far as I understand, it's been suggested elsewhere as well, United really want to do this or break the back of this deal this week. Where do you think we stand with this, Rob?
Yeah, they want to break the back of it this week. We're hearing the word Friday. So they want to get this done simply because they've spent a lot of time on it. So many of these points of this deal have been agreed over the last few weeks. It's not new. The issue has been Barcelona. Barcelona have gone about their business trying to buy everyone, going out into the marketplace, putting offers on the tables for players, but not actually having the money in their bank account to do it. Now, this is, again, talking about mentions and stuff on Twitter. Lots of Barcelona fans kind of, again, messaging me directly saying, you don't know anything about our football club. We've got no issues with money because we've done this, we've done that, we've done the other. And obviously, they're all sport readers again. But Barcelona are conducting themselves in quite a seriously bad manner at the moment. And not
it's
just
awful,
around
it.
It's not just about Frankie de Jong. And I think the whole thing, and this has come like directly from the players' camp, the way that they've treated de Jong like a piece of meat in all of this, when they owe him money.
And he was nice enough to say, yes, I'll defer these wages.
And this is exactly why I think Frankie de Jong might well have had enough at Barcelona. So you just mentioned there about what do we know about Frankie de Jong and Barcelona? He absolutely wanted to stay at the football club. Why is that? Both him and his fiance are settled in Catalonia, very happy there. Barcelona were the club of his dreams. Obviously, when he was at Ajax, you know, he talked about that being the kind of team he wanted to play for. Let's be honest, again, his style very suited to Spanish football, maybe a little bit more so than the Premier League. Kind of always had overtures to Southern Europe as opposed to, say, maybe a Northern League like the Premier League. And I think that kind of when people have added all those things together, they're like, well, obviously there's no deal to be done here. But the deal is there because of Barcelona. The deal is there because Barcelona went out into the marketplace and said, who wants Frankie de Jong? Manchester United said, we do. They came to a fee really quickly. That was done quickly. They knew how much United had to pay, obviously, for De Jong's services. And De Jong spoke to Ten Hag. This could have all been done weeks ago and finished because De Jong has decided that he will leave if he can't agree to something with Barcelona. So let's see what happens now, because I think a lot of this does go on these deferred wages now, because if they don't want to pay him it, what does De Jong do? Does he take Barcelona to court? Does he come up with an agreement over a 5-year period to get his 20-odd million back? I don't know. I don't know how you do it. But what we do know is that he can't move to a new club without it being decided. So it could be a case that Manchester United help out and maybe pay some of that wages, either by giving him a salary increase or maybe a nicer signing on fee, something like that. But Ali Dersen, his agent, has been in Manchester all of last week to conclude the Malaysia deal. He's also the agent, obviously, of Victor Lindelof and Donny van der Beek. And he's been basically with John Murto for the last 7 days. So Manchester United now in Barcelona, publicly showing their faces. I think we'll find out one way or the other where this deal's going to go.
We're not saying it will definitely happen. I mean,
no.
Barcelona doing things in the transfer market that people don't think are even possible. So maybe they'll magic some money out of somewhere. And then De Jong, because he does want to stay. And he's never made a secret of that. We've never made a secret of that on this show either. Mm-hmm. But it looks like Barcelona need De Jong out, as far as it stands, to fund or to give them room to buy players like Rafinha, Robert Lewandowski, etc.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
And the latest information from Barcelona directly is that Xavi likes the player, has talked about the player positively, but doesn't really want the player. You know, when he looks at his midfield and what he's getting, he likes the, you know, he would use De Jong in his squad, but he'd be a very, very expensive squad player, wouldn't he? So, you know, if you owe this guy best part of 20 million and his way, I think he has a wage increase for this year as well due. So this is the other side of the point is that his contract will trigger a wage increase. So they can't pay the wage that he's on at the moment in the last year. So they're now going to trigger his wage to go up another gear, but put him on the bench.
When you've got Gavi, Frank Kessie, Busquets, Pedri, who's just been given Iniesta's shirt number.
Huge deals on them as well. Like not just kind of bit part players or young players, kind of you're just keeping there to fluff along with your squad. These are players who are going to be starters. This is the bottom dollar. So where does Frankie de Jong play? You know, and I think the Frank Kessie one for us was the milestone. If they got over that, if they actually got Kessie sorted, which they have now done, then it really left de Jong's position at the football club precarious.
Rob, like, I think that this de Jong deal will get done. I think it will. I have heard other fans frustrated with it taking 10 weeks saying, just sign someone else, move on, other targets. I completely disagree with that. I don't know where you stand on this, but I think, as I've kind of said all along since it became clear who Ten Hag was targeting, and you see a common theme with all the players that Ten Hag is targeting, he's worked with them all before, apart from Malacia, who he knows from the Dutch league has the qualities that he's looking for in a left back. Mm-hmm. I think De Jong is so pivotal to United's new style of play working in the first season that I don't think they can sign an alternative. Ruben Neves, yeah, sure, good player, but it's going to take him time to get up to speed. I think the way that De Jong plays and his qualities, I think, is so important to the way that Ten Hag wants to play. And I don't think, I actually think they have to do this deal, whichever way it comes out.
Well, this is the crux, because what Manchester United are trying to do is to work with the wishes of their new coach. So I've said this before, that United are normally quite good at that in year one, that the manager says, I want this, 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 and this, and they try and go and get it. And I think with Ten Hag, the players that Ten Hag's put on the table in terms of names, they're all very gettable, even Frankie de Jong, especially when his club are the ones going out into the marketplace trying to shop him. So you can go and get this deal done. But like what you said there, I think it's real key. You talked about Ruben Neves, because I get asked this a lot, because I broke a story before about Ruben Neves and the interest of Man United. And that interest has been there for about 2 years. It's not a new thing. But
that's Ruben, interest from the people within the club, by the way. That is,
yeah,
you know.
Ruben Neves, being honest, is not as good as Frankie de Jong. Like, he isn't. But you're probably going to have to pay the same, if not more, for his services, because you're taking him from a Premier League team, just the way it is. So Wolves did not conclude their midfield business that they wanted to a few weeks ago. And again, we said that was key to that deal. And Ruben Neves is going nowhere at the moment. So you could go back and revisit that. You just said there again about, you know, fans saying, just move on. This is not Football Manager, people. You can't just do it and flick a switch. These talks are ongoing, and you normally will have 10 players on the spin at one time, you know, that you're looking at, that you're inquiring about. You're talking to agents, you're having meetings, you're finding prices, you're looking at contracts, all the legality of it, et cetera, et cetera. I think with Frankie de Jong is that Manchester United feel they can get the player because the player has spoken to Ten Hag, because the agent wants to move his player out of Barcelona now because of the way Barcelona conducted their business. And Manchester United have very publicly gone to Catalonia and said, here we are. You know, this is our faces. You know who we are. And we're doing this very publicly. They would not be doing that unless they really thought that the deal was on the table, ready to be signed. So Laporte, as I said last week, I called him a liar. He is a liar. He's a politician. He will say whatever he needs to remain as president and the populist god of Barcelona Football Club. And he would just say all sorts of things until stuff gets done. He said it about Lionel Messi, didn't he? You know, and then Lionel Messi left the football club.
Renewed until 2026, I think you said.
Yeah, so De Jong is just a player in terms of importance for Barcelona Football Club, way down the list in terms of their project. Not really. They're playing with Manchester United. They do realise that this creates hits and clicks. They're quite happy to be part of that. But they've now got to decide, because Man United don't want to just move on. But United have got other targets, and it's a case of, right, where do we put our energy now? This week, they're going to try and get De Jong done. And I think if it doesn't get done, then there's every chance United say to Ten Hag, we did our best, we agreed a fee, the player wanted to come, we agreed wages, and Barcelona messed us around so we can't get him. And then I think Ten Hag would say, okay, I get that. No problem, let's move on. So I think there's a kind of constructive timeline here that will continue to be followed to the end of this week.
I do think with that, though, as well, sorry, my dishwasher's going off. I don't know if you can hear a beeping. I do think that with this one, the potential egg on the face of Murta and Arnold, if they don't get it done, I think will drive them to do it. Personally, I think that they will stop at nothing to get this one done. I think that's the way they should act with this. And I only say it about Frankie de Jong because he's the player that they've chased for 10 weeks or however long it's been. If this was another player, I'd say change targets. But I think the qualities that De Jong has, I think, is so important to Ten Hag. But we'll see. Maybe this week is crucial, obviously.
Definitely. And I said that, like, with De Jong, I think it's a really, really great player and someone you can build your midfield around. Will he be entirely effective for Manchester United on day one in the Premier League? I don't know. And that's just a stylistic question. It's more about what all the other moving parts on the football pitch are doing and how De Jong can help them and how they can help De Jong. Are there other targets out there? Yes, there are. You know, you can go and do other business. But like you said there, the egg on the face thing, there is this thing with the Man United PR machine that they want to be shown to being in control all of the time of all their faculties and being the biggest football club in the world. There's this little kind of playoff here with Barcelona, isn't it? It's a global competitor in terms of commerce. And should be on the football pitch. But I think that now they've turned up in Spain and deliberately kind of put their feet on Spanish soil for the cameras. That's a big statement of intent. And I think they've got that from Ali Dersen. Ali Dersen's been with them all of last week at Carrington, talking about his own players. They would not be doing that unless they'd had those conversations.
De Jong has said publicly that he thinks Barca's the biggest club in the world. I think I might be paraphrasing a little bit there, but he has said that. I've said it on this show. I think that I don't doubt that United will get him to say that United are actually the biggest club in the world if he does end up joining in his first.
And do you know what? Yeah, there's also some former comments where it's quite interesting that have been around. I was kind of researching this the other day. Ali Dersen talking about the move from Ajax to Barcelona. And he was saying at the time how unprofessional he and De Jong thought they were in terms of how they were conducting their business. And then eventually they got the offer. They had the phone call, got the offer, an amazing offer, of course, which is still there today. Just so happens they haven't been paying him that wage, have they? So there's a lot of this here. I think one Spanish newspaper described it as the player believing that Barcelona were declaring war on him. Can't say which journalist actually said that, but that was kind of the headline in Spain. And that's very interesting, because I think that is how the camp feels at the moment, is that Barcelona have just used De Jong in all of this because they're looking for a load of cash.
Yeah, they do need to strengthen other positions, but midfield is not a position they are lacking in quality in.
Nope.
De Jong is probably the biggest asset they have that they were willing to sell in terms of what transfer fee they can command, how much salary they'll save, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. So we'll see over the next few days. But let's move on to Erik ten Hag's first press conference, because he confirmed, he was asked about De Jong,
by travelling journalists on the pre-season tour of Thailand and Australia. United play Liverpool after this podcast today. We're recording just before it. And he did confirm that midfield was the primary objective to strengthen. Obviously, he was asked about De Jong specifically, but rolled out the old classic. I don't talk about players from other clubs. Christian Eriksen has been on the verge of joining for a while. I think the hopes are that he'll join the preseason tour when they land in Australia, pending a medical. De Jong is the other target, obviously, and Ten Hag has made it clear that midfield and offence are the areas he's looking to strengthen. Lisandro Martinez, Antony, Eriksen, etc., are all on the targets list. Didn't mention the defence, though, and Lisandro Martinez is a defender. So does that give you an inkling?
I think the reason why he said that in that tone and in that exact direct way is because he probably thinks he's got his defence sorted because Martinez will be coming. So Martinez wants to leave Ajax, Manchester United want him, Ten Hag wants him, all the things are aligned. So I think that's why in that presser yesterday, he was very specific about, I want to strengthen my midfield and my attack now. That's kind of what he said, paraphrasing. But yeah, Martinez, you're right, obviously can play defensive midfield. But I do believe that Ten Hag has vocally said before during the Ajax time that he doesn't think that Martinez is the greatest defensive midfielder, though obviously he can do that. But he can do obviously lots of different things.
So I've just thought of he's confirmed Harry Maguire's still captain, obviously. So yes. I think I might roll that into this section, Rob, because as far as we understand it, 90 min, Ajax are digging their heels in. They've sold Sebastian Haller, as we've said. They've sold Ryan Gravenberch to Bayern. They've raised a lot of money. They've signed Steven Bergwijn. Potentially a replacement for Antony. I don't know where they intend on playing him, but they've raised their price on both players as far as I understand it, and the total package of the two is like 140 million euros. That's like setting their stall, like, because they don't need to sell. It's not to say that the deal can't get done for less than that, but that's where United are encountering some problems. They've put an offer in of 50 million euros inclusive of add-ons at the weekend, I think, which is more than what Arsenal offered. Arsenal's still in the mix, but not currently at the table. And Martinez is not best pleased. So I think, Rob, you kind of said that you think you'll push this one through, didn't you?
Yes. And I think quite often, I think with clubs from outside the really major leagues, or like the Premier League and La Liga, holding on to your players is all well and good, but when, you know, the bright lights come calling, players either kind of completely react to it, or they do say what Timber did recently. And Timber said, no, do you know what? Quite happy here. Want to play at World Cup. Don't really want to do this yet. I'll do it in a year or so. I'm a young player. I think with Martinez, again, he's part of that sect of Ten Hag players that love Ten Hag. So again, we may not be able to get this deal over the line without Ten Hag at the football club. Probably not. It'd be a much more difficult deal. But all of these conversations are going on behind closed doors. So Martinez does want to come to the Premier League. We again compared it to Darwin Nunes from a few weeks ago, where the agent said he's going to the Premier League one way or the other. We know Arsenal have a significant interest in Martinez. But I do think that Ten Hag really is the kind of key component here, and that Martinez wants to play for him again. Same with Antony. So I don't think Manchester United are going to pay anywhere near that kind of fee. But I think it's also a lot about the player. So I'll compare it to the Jadon Sancho deal with Dortmund, where Jadon Sancho wanted to go to Manchester United but was not willing to kind of kick and scream about it. So it took a year, and United got the fee down from 108 million to, what was it, 70, something like that, a year later. I don't think this is the same situation. Martinez is going to be playing in the Premier League in a few weeks' time. It's just whether it will be for Arsenal or Manchester United.
And if Martinez doesn't get a move this year, United will probably go back for Timber next year.
This is how it works. This is the whole thing. So
he might, if he doesn't do it now, you know, he might not get it. So, Antony is in the same boat. I think he's obviously priced pretty high. Think he is on the agenda, but later, to be honest. But let's talk about Harry Maguire as captain, because why is Harry Maguire continuing to be captain is the initial reaction to this, because Ten Hag has confirmed. He said it in a manner where I thought, didn't seem to think that that would be, that was a long-term thing, but it has been interpreted as he's captain for the remainder of the season, for the season ahead. What do you think that says about his position in the team, in the squad, etc.? And obviously, Rafa Varane has missed the training session. So did Maguire yesterday on Monday. Rafa Varane injury problems are cropping up. Do you think we're looking at a potential Maguire-Martinez centre-back pairing for the... How do you think this works? What do you think the makeup of the defence will be?
Well, in terms of the captainship, like for our show here, we kind of have, I think, two philosophical football audiences. We have our UK audience and our international audience. So I think those from outside of the UK just do not have the same stigma around captaincy as we do in England. So we see this all of the time where Erik ten Hag, obviously a guy from Holland, where the captaincy just generally goes to one of your most senior players. It's not a huge thing. And I think that's kind of how he described it yesterday. He said he's already the established captain at football club. I've got no issues with that. I'm not even kind of thinking about it. And we carry on. And I think that's how it will work with Harry Maguire. Now, you just saying there positionally, what will they do? It does depend a lot on Lisandro Martinez, and it does depend a lot on Rafael Varane's injury problems. You know, what we do know is that Rafa Varane is still struggling on the tour. You know, he's still got issues. That worries me. I'll put that straight out there, because I think with Varane, even at 28, 29 years old, being a kind of Rolls-Royce type defender, it's no good if that Rolls-Royce hasn't got an engine. So will Harry Maguire play on the right-hand side of the defence if you buy Lisandro Martinez? Maybe. Or maybe you'll play Victor Lindelof there. So Lindelof and Martinez might actually be a more stylistic kind of combination. And you might find that Maguire does end up being a backup on that left-hand side. You just not know at the moment. You could still be club captain at a football club. Like, you know, Mark Noble, ask him at West Ham. You don't have to play every week. So I think this is, again, where English football fans get really entrenched in this. Where is our Roy Keane? Where is our Roy Keane? Where is our Brian Robson? It's not really how modern football is, certainly not when your coaches and your manager are from outside of the UK. So this is not the Fergie days where you had a Scotsman running the football club. This is now a Dutchman, and it's a Dutch style of thinking. So Harry Maguire could still be the captain, still on the bench. And what do? You just give the armband to Ronaldo if he's there, or you give it to Bruno Fernandes. And there's no drama, because the drama should be, Scott, about the flipping football. Should be how good you're playing and not who's got an armband on shouting and screaming. How good can you be on a football pitch as opposed to all of the political stuff that goes with, I think, what English football becomes obsessed with?
Most expensive club captain at 29, I think, in football history. Taking the Ashley Young role, taking the Gary Neville role when he was at the end of his career, sitting on the bench in a stand in a suit, costing 80 million quid. I don't know.
Everybody understands that the world record fee is a little bit of a joke for Harry Maguire. We all understand that, but that's not Harry Maguire's fault. That's not Erik ten Hag's fault. It's just what it is. So ten Hag would have to decide now, will he use the player or not? And I think this is kind of just the kind of crossroads that he stands at with all of the players. So it would be bad timing, wouldn't it, just to say, oh no, Harry Maguire's not my captain. That's not going to help the player play well, is it? So you've got this footballer. And I do think that Ten Hag genuinely believes that he's a decent defender. You know, he's talked a lot talked about his England performances and what he did at United 12 months before, obviously during Ole's last full season, which was really successful. So Ten Hag's going to try and tap into that first before he comes in with a kind of metaphorical gun, kind of saying to people, right now, I'm going to do this because I'm the new coach making a stand. I think he wants to develop players, and that's the kind of coach I actually want at Man United.
Yeah, I'm loosely quoting Ten Hag here, but he did some club media. He did a two-part interview at the back end of last week, I think, or maybe over the weekend, and said something along the lines of, no, he was talking about young players, but he said, every player who plays must deserve their place. It doesn't matter about their status or anything else. It's, I will pick the best players.
Yep. And he also said in that same interview, which I really liked, and I put this out on Twitter, he said, we've got to be brave on the ball, but we have got to work harder off it. He said, mm-hmm. and that's what I feel I'll be teaching these boys. And I thought, interesting, because when you come into a football club and you see the players and the sector and what they do, if you're at a club like Manchester United, you should be able to expect that these players do all right on the ball. They should be okay on the ball. Now, we know that's not always been the case at United. But I do think that the tactical side of it has been that United haven't had a lot of off-ball tactics. And that hurts you to be able to select the pass. So I think that if you fix that bit, you might find that, you know, Scott McTominay doesn't lose the ball as much and Fred doesn't lose the ball as much because other players are showing for them. There's no doubt, I think, United, that has been a problem for years, is that players kind of go, well, I'm not involved in this play, so I'll just kind of have a jog on the wing, you know, because I'm not involved here. And you need to have a team that's wholly engaged all the time. So like you're saying about young players, if a young player shows it in training, I think that young player will get promoted to the first team.
Yeah, it harks back to a point I've spoken about, the lens that I'm looking at United through, and I tweeted about it yesterday as well. Everybody is caught up in United being awful from the back end of last season.
Yeah.
But as much as you want to blame the players for down in tools, because I think they did. I'm not going to say that they didn't. They didn't try. And fans hold that against them, obviously. And
of course.
Maybe you should, because obviously they're playing for Man United. But at the same time, if you look at it from the players' side, they had a coach they didn't like. They had disarray above them. They had arguments within the camp. You're looking at these players and talking about how Anthony Martial is useless. 2 years ago, he scored 17 Premier League goals or something along those lines. Marcus Rashford is useless. A few years ago, he was one of the most promising players in English football and has had injury problems for 2 years. And now people are judging these players through the lens of last season and the last few years of... Which and everyone will hold their hand up and say they haven't been coached properly though. So yeah. Like, what are you? Which one is it? Are they bad players or have they not been coached properly?
And this is again kind of where we are in the modern game, isn't it? Like we talked today about Ten Hag and his comments about Harry Maguire and the captaincy, and immediately there was a little bit of a tidal wave of a push against it of Ten Hag doesn't know what he's doing. Well, this is before we've seen any football played, and Erik ten Hag arrives at Manchester United with a very, very good record and as a champion. So, you know, I think he does know what he's doing. It's just a case that you need to give him time and you have to kind of, as a fan, I think, set back what the things that you feel and not kind of apply them to what you believe you know. Go and watch the football first. Get excited about that. Enjoy that. And let's see what happens. This is not a bad set of players. I do blame them for what happened last year, but I really do blame the ownership for bringing in someone like Ralph Rangnick. They needed a very different style of squad and basically cutting his legs off from day one. So saying, you're the king of the gegenpress, the person who influenced the high press for the likes of Tuchel, Nagelsmann, Klopp, etc. But do you know what? We're not going to help you with that. So you're going to fail and then we'll blame you. Then we'll sack you. And then we'll move on to the next manager. That's on the Glazers. So I think that that's where fans need to keep their eye or kind of their focus on how the football club is run, as opposed to maybe just individuals. Because this is the whole point. A footballer in one system can look absolute garbage and in another system look world-class. It's just what it is. And we need to see now the systems that Erik ten Hag's got up his sleeves. Because he can play different ways. We've already seen in the training here for pre-season before the Liverpool game, maybe United are going to do 4-3-3 this year. They've been practicing it. They've been setting up like that. So that's really interesting. So will he use it in the opening games of the tour? We will see. But this is what you've got to wait for. Wait, people. Don't get upset about stuff that you can't control. You know, let's see what these players can do, because you can't get rid of all of them simply because they've failed in a previous 12 months.
Nailed it. you can't get. They can't sack them all. They literally can't. And Ten Hag has a good reputation as a coach, has lofted players well above their ability with his coaching in Ajax in the Champions League in the past. And United have a few players who've not hit the heights of their potential over the last few years too. So let's look at it through a different lens. Let's refresh, as much as it as painful as it might be to get last season out of the system. Remember it, but don't carry that bad energy around. I know that you want to. Every right to be frustrated at the Glazers, but do you want to carry that negative energy and just take all of the enjoyment out of football that you get and not give them another chance? Because that, like it or not, they're getting another chance, so just get on board with it. That's what I think.
Totally.
Anyway, talking about getting another chance and training systems and this kind of stuff, obviously we'll see what happens in the Liverpool game. Jadon Sancho was spotted in a training clip on the right side, Marcus Rashford on the left, nodding in a header from a Jadon Sancho cross with Anthony Martial through the middle. You pointed out, Rob, I don't know why I said, I was going to say mob then, I'm not sure. You pointed out, Rob, that Marcus Rashford's looking in good nick.
Yeah.
What do you think?
He's done exactly what all the other guys have done, put training videos out. He had a trainer out with him on holiday and kind of running up steps like Rocky, you know, doing all of that stuff for social. It makes a nice little viral clip. But he looks in incredible shape, like just physically, just to the eye. And that's a start, isn't it? Because I think with Marcus last year, one of the things that kind of got regurgitated this week about Rashford and maybe Ranić and his relationship with that coach was that Ranić truly believed that Marcus could do it, was doing it in training, but there was some mental disconnect between doing it in training and doing it in matches. And Ranić couldn't figure that out in the time that he was there. Couldn't get there. Now, we've just said there that Manchester United team did kind of down tools. I think that is accurate. I also think there was lots of politics going on in the dressing room around, say, Ronaldo, the senior players. Rashford's part of that, maybe the younger players. But I think with Rashford, he's key to this team working because of what he is to Manchester United, and that he is a kind of young statesman of the football club. He is a Mancunian. He is a Man United fan. I hear all the time from United supporters, oh, we don't care about that stuff. That's not important. But you know what? When you're building a club, it is really important. People that actually genuinely love the fabric of the football team and the club. You can see Marcus Rashford's gone away and got fit. And all the stuff that's come out of his mouth in the last week as well about Ten Hag, the training sessions, it's all been real blue sky stuff. It's been like, ready for it. This is what I want. I want a new start. I want fresh. I want new tactics. I want to be taught. I want a coach to help me. And let's be honest, no coach has helped these guys for a year. Since Ole walked out the door and between the Ranić era, it's all been political. It's all been about the dressing room. It's always been about sniping and who's staying and who's going and who's not good enough. The fans have attacked the players nonstop. That's the problem with social media, is that players do see all of this. Anthony Martial knows all of you lot hate him. That's a problem. You know, if you want him to play well, you need to love some of your players and just give them some of that. And I think with Rashford, he knows that this is probably not his last chance, but his biggest chance to get back on track in the immediacy.
Yeah, I mean, hopeful that Rashford, Martial, etc. Rashford is probably, well, he's one of the most, if not the most senior academy graduate in the squad now. I'm trying to think. Jesse Lingard and Paul Pogba have obviously left. So Rashford's always been pretty high profile, but is, like you say, Rob, is now is such an important season for Marcus Rashford to get back on track under a coach who can probably improve him more than any of the coaches that United have had in the past. But
yeah, and I lost count the amount of times at the end of last season that I heard fans say to me directly, oh, Marcus, you know, he's a good player when he's on it, but, you know, he's been wasting his time helping feed the children. I heard that constantly.
Yes,
that was a thing, that is reality. But this is how, maybe, you know, we're kind of going into deeper political debates here of the UK and how people think, but people are actually thinking that his football is affected by him having a public Twitter conversation with government about school meals and stuff like that. It's not real. I think what is real is that Manchester United were a really badly run football club, and it affected multiple players, dozens of them. You know, they weren't able to find their form all at the same time. So I think there's still plenty of hope for Marcus Rashford, because he's not a bad footballer and he does care. And I think when you've got those two things together, a little bit of direction, maybe a puppet master to help these players to kind of say, you know what, you do this well, but you don't do that as well. Let's work on this week. That's going to help him so much.
Need to give them some time as well. It's not all going to pick up very, very like that, and they've said this themselves as well. So if they get hammered by Liverpool, or if they don't win their first game in the Premier League convincingly, I know it's hard renewing the patience every single year, but I think it's required again. Anything you want to say?
I'm just going to say on the back of that, good thing we're talking about the Liverpool game. Now, one good thing that I liked what Ten Hag said yesterday was he said, we're going out this season to win every game. He said, I don't care if it's a friendly, I don't care if it's a small match, a big match, Premier League match, a European match, That's the mindset. Now, I don't think that was the mindset last year. I think last year it was all just embroidered about, oh, can United get top four? And the players going, we might be able to get top four, but can I be bothered? You know, so there was a lot of that last year. I think this manager will keep all of that on track.
This manager also wants to keep Ronaldo. He said in his press conference, he is not for sale. 20 times. let's talk about it, because we spoke about the press conference earlier on about the targets that he's looking at in midfield and offense, etc. Mm-hmm. But the press conference was dominated by Cristiano Ronaldo questions. Ten Hag was short, I think, but that's what we come to expect from him. You know, yeah. He doesn't really need to say any more than he did, really. Nope. And he was probed and asked about 6 or 7 questions on Ronaldo out of 10 questions or whatever it was. You know, he wants to keep him. Ronaldo's camp have made it public that they would like to find a new challenge because of no Champions League, etc. I don't think the offers that Ronaldo expected are coming in quite as quickly as he'd have hoped. And we'll roll in a report from the Times here as well that Richard Arnold has apparently spoken to George Mendes to try and convince Ronaldo to change his mind, and Ronaldo's camp are impressed. So is this, can we see Ronaldo potentially going back on what he said and just reintegrating at some point?
Yes, and it's all about the timeline. So where were we, where are we now, and where can we be in the not-so-distant future? Cristiano got his pay cut to £360,000 a week, obviously due to Manchester United not being in the Champions League. Not very happy about that. Suddenly he wants to go to Chelsea. He wants to go to Barcelona. He wants to go anywhere else that will pay him his wage. Now, where are we? Do we stand today? Well, Mendes has a very good relationship with Manchester United anyway, as it stands. But obviously Richard Arnold has taken over. Richard Arnold is trying to position himself as the anti-Ed Woodward. He really is. He's trying to be not man of the people, but he's trying to be, you know, I am a business don. I know what I'm doing. And I actually think that's being appreciated. So I think agents like that, I think other football clubs like that. Manchester United now seem to have a structure that mirrors the top clubs in terms of a director of football, a CEO, et cetera, et cetera. We haven't had that, have we, in the previous years? So will he stay at Manchester United? You just said about offers. Chelsea have just chucked a load of money at Raheem Sterling. And I believe that that's kind of where they're going. They know
they want
a
right winger as well. Obviously, they've been after Rafinha. Serge Gnabry.
Yeah. They've just got rid of Romelu Lukaku and moved his wage, and all 100% because the manager doesn't want that style of striker. And we said this about Cristiano. Why would you then buy a striker who is like that, but older, slower? Yeah, he scores lots of goals. He's not going to help Kai Havertz, is he? So this is the whole thing. It's about buying pieces that help your team work. Ronaldo could score 30 or 40 goals at Chelsea next year, and Chelsea could come seventh. It's the truth. It's just how it is. It's what I said about United 12 months ago. I said Ronaldo scored tons of goals and you come outside the Champions League. Exactly what happened. So I don't think that the Chelsea market is there for him now. And I think the Barcelona market is fading simply because Barcelona seems to be wanting to buy everyone. Now, how do you pay Cristiano Ronaldo £500,000 a week when you literally have no money? So I think that those are the two main clubs for him. There's a chance maybe to go to the MLS eventually, but that's not on now. You know, in 12 months' time.
If you're making a bone about not playing in the Champions League, would you go to MLS?
I don't think he's making a bone about the Champions League. I think it's make-believe. I think this is all for the story and for the move. I think it's about the wage. So this is his last year, potentially, of earning the super elite wage, you know, the £500,000 upwards wage. Yes, he's got, I think, a lifetime £1 billion contract with his kit supplies with Nike, isn't it? I think for his lifetime, he's not going to be out of money, is he? But Cristiano Ronaldo is a business and a footballer. So he understands that. He gets all of those things. So this year is an important year for him. He does want to win. He wants to be at a club. He doesn't want to be doing what he did 12 months ago at Manchester United. But he's also got to take responsibility for it, Scott. I'm not giving Ronaldo a pass because he's Ronaldo. If you stay at the football club, do what Ten Hag tells you to do, score goals, help the team, and keep this a little bit more quiet in terms of how you leak stuff, and let's move forward for the next year. Because I think he's damaging his legacy the way he's been the last week or two. yeah, people will say he's not really said anything publicly, but we know enough about what's going on behind the scenes. So, yes, there's a very good chance that Ronaldo stays at the football club, because I don't think anyone else is going to pay him anywhere near what Manchester United have been paying him. And it just isn't that opportunity for him. Does he want to play in the Champions League? Yes, but I don't think it's about that.
Do you think if Ronaldo does change his mind and ends up staying, do you think his position in Ten Hag's team is any... Do you think his stature or his standing in Ten Hag's plans has changed at all? Do you think, let's say Ronaldo didn't make this noise, was he automatic, has to start every game up front? Now he's made that noise, double-crossed Ten Hag in a sense, and now Ten Hag's going to look at him and say, no, you're going to play a squad role. You'll play when I tell you to, and you'll like it.
And I think that that might be exactly how it goes. So we did tactical shows before Ten Hag was confirmed. We looked at kind of different managers, who fits who, you know, what would Manchester United try to do. Ten Hag's system, the way Ten Hag plays, Cristiano Ronaldo does not fit his system at all. Not in any of the metrics. The only metric that fits is goals. He does score goals, but he just doesn't do the work because he's an old man and it's not his game. He wasn't good at it, Scott, when he was at Man United the first time as a kid. You know, Sir Alex has said so many times, we had literally kind of like nine outfield players working for Cristiano.
Play him up front centrally because he wouldn't
play him
back
up front in the end, or play him on the left and give him a free role, and everyone else, Wayne Rooney having to drop into a more of a kind of deeper midfield role to look after Ronaldo's work. So that's how it worked at that point. Then Man United have to decide in the next year, do they want to play lip service Cristiano, pay him, sell the shirts, and in a year's time, we all go, well, Ten Hag's first season failed because Ronaldo scored 30 goals and United came fifth. Now, that is on the table. I think that could happen. But I don't think Ten Hag's going to let that happen. I think Ten Hag will say to Cristiano, like he already has, you're part of my plans. I think you're a world-class striker. But this is how we play football. And if you don't play football like that, you'll be rotated in and out. Now, I actually think that's what Ronaldo needs. I don't think he needs to be the automatic starter. Pay him £500,000 a week, pay him £360,000 a week. Doesn't matter what you're paying him. That's on the Glazers now, but it's about usage. So if he can give you 25 goals off the bench with reduced minutes, but you can go and win more football matches and you come comfortably top four and say, get to an FA Cup final and do well in the Europa, jobs are done. Ronaldo leaves in 12 months. Big hugs, big kisses. Goodbye, Cristiano. Thank you for a time at the football club again. And now we go and get a striker that we actually need and can use. That's why I think someone like Antony is key in this, because I think it's the balance of the attack. If Rashford does play through the middle, if Martial plays through the middle, and you've got them maybe stronger, wider players, the service is there, the youth is there, the impact is there. Then you can say to Cristiano, yeah, do you know what? Go and do what you do well. But we can't just have a team that just looks after Ronaldo. We can't do that in the modern game. City won't be doing it for Haaland. I'm telling you that now. And if Lewandowski goes to any of the other big clubs anywhere like that, people won't be doing it for Lewandowski. They won't be. You've got to work with your team. You can't just turn up, you know, posture, pout, do your Sue celebration and think that pays the bills. It doesn't pay the bills. You end up fifth and people will get sacked for it.
Yeah, I mean, agree with you.
Ask Ole.
Yeah. Found out firsthand. I mean, Ronaldo, I think I've made this comparison before with, I know he's a different position, but he's the same age. Thiago Silva doesn't play every game for Chelsea, and everyone thinks Thiago Silva is amazing at being a centre-back. He still is. He's still very good. He's had some blips here and there, but if you can rest Ronaldo and make sure you're managing his legs properly, managing his engine properly, giving him minutes here and there where he needs to, and optimizing his fitness rather than just putting him out there to stand there the entire time. I think
he looked knackered last year. Mm. He looked knackered in games. Like, I was watching him, and at 70 minutes in, he looked like he was 50 years old. He looks like me. You know, I was like, you know, he looks decrepit on that football pitch. And it was like, that shouldn't be like that. You know, you've got to find a way to look after him and to try and stage manage the football matches. And this is why I am okay with having a Martial back in the squad. I'm okay with Rashford playing through the middle, because it's about now, isn't it? And finding these ways. It would have been loads better if Cristiano was on this tour. He could have helped and been part of this. Now, we're not going to say why he isn't on the tour. That's not really of interest. I think now for Ten Hag, it's finding all the solutions to this Rubik's Cube. Ronaldo will be part of that. I do kind of feel he will stay. But if he goes, I'm not worried about that. I've heard some pundits and some United people say he is essential to next season. I don't know what football club you watch. I really, really do not know that, because he's not essential to next season. You just got to make sure that if he goes, that you find your solutions.
Yeah, and I think I'll come back to a point that I've made recently with Paul Pogba. As much as I rated Paul Pogba, his profile was at times a bigger issue than the United team as a whole. Ronaldo's one of the greatest players of all time. Of course, his profile's massive. United need to address that. There's no player in this Ten Hag system can be bigger or more important than Ten Hag's system and the team. And I think if Ronaldo's managed into that, if he decides to stay, if he ends up staying, I think it's going to have to be that way. And if he leaves, you rid yourself of that high-profile problem and you can move on. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see what develops in the next few weeks. Rob, I'm going to wrap up in a second. Anything you would like to say before we shoot?
No, I'll say something about training again, from the training clips, because it's been quite interesting, haven't they? All the viral stuff United have been putting out. We knew they would, but I really like the one that got put out, I think, yesterday. I think it was by Simon Stone of BBC. He put it out where when a goal was put in, that the team the goal was against had to get down and give them 10. Push-ups, so they all dropped and did their 10 push-ups like they were in the United States Marine Corps or something like that. I think I quite like that, because again, it's just all about discipline, isn't it? And it's a new methodology. That's not something you would have seen Ole do. You might have seen Ralph Rangnick do it, even though no one listened to Ralph. But this is all about building responsibility and physicality. So would Cristiano do that? Not quite sure. Would he do it? Say, Cristiano, get down and give me 10 because you're on the team that's
losing.
I'm
sure he'd love the opportunity to take his shirt off and do a few push-ups.
I'm sure he'd like to take his shirt off. I'm not sure about the push-ups. So we'll see. So this is all good now. Like, I think we've got games coming up, and it's great that we can finally talk about some actual football. Talk a little bit about systems, get a little bit more geeky again. But of course, the transfer activity is going to be ongoing. Frankie De Jong, watch this space. You know, I think this is kind of where we stand now with De Jong, and both with Martinez. These are the two players that Man United are trying to get over the line.
Yes, Rob, we'll be back Friday. United play Liverpool after this podcast. Chances are you might have seen the game before you listen to this podcast. Hopefully United don't lose 5-0. we'll see. But they also play Melbourne on Friday. So we'll do our next show after that game, pretty much off the back of it. Analyze the Liverpool game, analyze the Melbourne game as well. Talk about some tactical tweaks that we've seen, identity, that kind of stuff, and also maybe touch on any transfer developments that have come to pass since as well. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. Well, you can head over to subscribe to our podcast on our YouTube channel. You can subscribe to our show as well, wherever you get your podcast, on audio platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, and the likes of it. And we're on Tuesdays and Fridays on YouTube and all those platforms. So head over to YouTube as well. Subscribe, hit the like button, join the community, leave a comment, etc., etc. And the link should be in the description of this episode. If you're listening on an audio platform, you can also follow us on Twitter at @ScottSaunders, @Rob_B, and @PromiseLandMU for the show. Rob, thank you very much. Catch you soon, mate. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. And we will see you on Friday.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.